Today on The Front Porch, poetry out of pain.
Trying to make art is moving the feeling from me to you. Making art is a sort of pleasurable activity, even when you are dealing with material that is extremely dark and painful.
Donald Hall is a renowned writer and poet from Wilmot, New Hampshire. 7 years ago, his wife and fellow poet Jane Kenyon died of leukemia. Since then, much of Hall's poetry is about his relationship with Kenyon and how her death continues to affect him. His latest collection is called The Painted Bed. It includes many new poems about Jane Kenyon, but near the end there are poems about new life and new relationships, even as Jane remains his greatest love. I'm John Walters. Join me and Donald Hall on The Front Porch on NHPR. The Painted Bed is the latest collection of poetry by Donald Hall. Donald is a resident of Wilmot at Eagle Pond Farm. He's a former poet laureate of New Hampshire. He's published more than a dozen poetry collections and numerous books of short stories, essays, letters, and several children's books. He's won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Poetry and the Caldecott Medal for Children's Writing. He's been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and he was also the very first guest we had on this program back in February of 2001. The Painted Bed is his third book of poems since the death of his wife and fellow poet Jane Kenyon. The two were married for 23 years until Jane's death from leukemia in 1995. His three most recent collections have been in large measure about Jane, her presence, her absence, and the process of remembering, forgetting, and surviving. Donald Hall joins us to talk about the new book. Donald, welcome to The Front Porch.
Thank you for having me.
Does it surprise you that you're still writing about Jane?
No, it doesn't really. Actually, I'm not so much right now. Mm-hmm. When a book comes out, I revise all the time, and so that the book represents the state of mind of 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, not much more recent than that. So I sort of correct your question to begin with. That's not friendly. But I certainly was writing about her. For the first 4 or 5 years after her death, all the time. And that didn't surprise me. I couldn't do anything else. For a while, it was exclusive. There was no other subject. But that stopped after a while. And I still, goodness knows, I think of her every day for, I don't know how much of the day, but I think of her all the time. But I don't write about her so much anymore. I am past a kind of stage of grief. It does go with stages. When Jenny first died, people told me, oh, not you'll get over it, but things will get better. I didn't want to hear that. You know, I wanted to resist it. It sounded like betrayal, being a fink. But it does change. It does.
The process of writing poetry is a process of working, reworking, rewriting. Does that help you get over it, or are you living more with it?
No, I think it helps me. Get over is too much of a word. Yeah. It's to do something about it. That's mm-hmm. really it. I've been writing poetry heavily or seriously since I was 14. And when anything happens in my life that is extraordinary, good or bad, I will necessarily go to the table and begin to put some words together. I don't necessarily make a poem, or certainly I don't right away. For me, and for many poets, but not every one, I need to work over and over again. I just brought in with me a bunch of poems that just typed up. I just got them this morning, and I eagerly go to them. I adore rewriting. I love it. I don't like writing. I like rewriting. And I'll get back to your real question. When the poem, say, of Without, the most immediate after her death, began, In the beginning, they were screams of pain. But if I put a scream of pain on paper, I have been writing poetry all these years. Writing poetry, the revision of a poem, is a way to work on the poem, to try to make it into art. And art is something that can go from the inside of me to the inside of you. But it won't do the raw thing, the note of the feeling won't do that. You may acknowledge, or sort of, yes, this guy is feeling terrible. But it won't come inside you. So that, in fact, writing, trying to make art is moving the feeling, in this case the pain, from me to you. Making art is a sort of pleasurable activity, even when you are dealing with material that is extremely dark and painful.
I wouldn't have thought so.
People find it hard to believe, but it's really true. In Without, there's a point at which, it's true that I could write about 2 hours a day. And after the 2 hours, it was miserable. I knew I had 22 hours of, depression until I could get going again. There's a point in one of the letters to Jane where I tell the dog, Poet Man is suiting up. I'm just excited to get down to the desk and work on these wretched poems.
I wanted to have you read a poem from the new collection, Painted Bed, called Distressed Haiku.
Sure. The haiku, I suppose, distress because they're not, formally accurate haiku, if there can be such a thing in English. Distressed Haiku. In a week or 10 days, the snow and ice will melt from Cemetery Road. I'm coming. Don't move. Once again, it is April. Today is the day we would have been married 26 years. I finished with April, halfway through March. You think that their dying is the worst thing that could happen. Then they stay dead. Will Hall ever write lines that do anything but whine and complain? In April, the blue mountain revises from white toward green. The Boston Red Sox win 100 straight games. The mouse rips the throat of the lion, and the dead return.
Distressed Haiku by Donald Hall. Will Hall ever write lines that do anything but whine and complain? Do you ask that yourself? Or
Right. I became worried about my self-pity or a little ashamed of it. I did pity myself thoroughly, losing this wonderful woman, wonderful poet. But after a while, and it's part of the process of grief, I could stand back and look at myself as I wept. As if, in my most self-lacerating moods, I would think that I was posing for a picture of the weeping man. And that is to criticize one's self-pity or one's parading of one's self-pity. But I hope that the poems of grief, in fact, I believe most of the time, that they do something more than that or other than that.
Well, I suppose if you are in that good a relationship with someone for that long, it's natural to miss them a lot and to miss them for a long time.
Yep. We lived in the house together 24 hours a day. Neither one of us went away to work, except rarely we went off separately to a poetry reading. But we were there. We didn't talk all day or hang around in the same room, but we were very aware of the presence of the other. And another thing about our closeness is that, in a sense, we were doing the same thing. We weren't writing the same poems, but we were both writing poetry and both in love with poetry. And when we did talk, not during the day when we were working, but often at night, we often talked about poetry. We also talked about our friends' troubles and the weather and breakfast and whatever. But we talked about poetry, too.
Could you talk about Jane Kenyon, the person, the writer?
Yes. When I married Jane, she was a young poet who might or might not have been a very good poet. She was a very talented young woman. But I watched over a period of the marriage, say 23 years, I watched her get better and better with a wonderful stubbornness and assiduousness. She worked in her reading, she worked in revising, she always sat down at the desk all the time. Jane was a depressive and she had bad times. When she came out or began to come out of depression, she would often look backward and write about it. So some of the poems are sadder than she was at the time when she actually put them together. But it was very important for me. It was a real influence on me to see her getting better and better and better. It was very exciting. She was 19 years younger than I was. We at first rejected the notion of marriage because Jane would have been a widow, we thought, for 25 years. So thus the ironies of reality.
She must have been a strong person to establish herself as a poet when she's married to such a well-known poet. I mean, especially when you have the man who's the famous one and the woman who isn't, the woman kind of folds up and stays in the shadow.
I was afraid of that happening, but she was too tough, too strong. I mean, we had troubles, troubles between us, but sadnesses or angers because of what other people would say or do. We had them both ways. I mean, at the beginning, men seemed to have let us know that, I was a poet, and wasn't it sweet that his young wife wrote poetry too? Bong! Jane would like to break their noses. And then later on, when she began to be well known, we had people, always men again, who let us know that she was better than I was. And then, ha ha ha, look, the younger person and the female is better than the male. It's still sexist, just in the absolute opposite direction. And when those things happened, it was unpleasant for us. But we didn't. I mean, of course we were rivalrous, but there was nothing that came between us. Rivalry was another kind of closeness, I think.
Did you help each other's poetry? Not necessarily by criticizing or editing or something, but just by the sheer fact that you're both working.
Well, the sheer fact is probably the most important thing. But we also did always read each other. Mm-hmm. Jane was always my first reader, and I was hers. And we would help each other, in fact. We would say that some word or two was horrible, or I think almost always we had something critical to say. And that was okay. Every now and then, one of us would get a little polite, you know, oh, thank you very much. Yes, that's very interesting. I thought that was the best part. I mean, or something like that, you know. But that would wear off. And it wasn't even like that most of the time. Jenny used to say that when I saw her new poems, I'd say, these are going to be good. And she'd say, going to be, huh? Right. It was no problem. We helped each other.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with poet Donald Hall. His latest collection is called The Painted Bed. Could you read a poem called Sweater?
Yes.
And I think talks about, in an indirect way, why you're still writing poems about Jane.
Yep. Sweater. The second June afterward, I wrapped Jane's clothes for Rosie's place. But I keep on finding things I missed. A scarf hanging from a hook in the tool shed. A green down vest, or a sweater tossed on the swivel chair by her desk where her papers pile untouched, just as she left them the last time she fretted over answering a letter, or worked to end a poem by observing something as careless as the white sleeve of a cardigan.
I guess that's the process of living in that house that the two of you shared for so long, and the process of finding new poems to write all the time.
Yeah, finding more evidence of Jane and more poems. More evidence left around the house. You understand that the address book is written in her handwriting, and I'll find a new item of clothing, which I must have been looking at for 7 years, but somehow not identified. So she's there a lot.
You ever think about moving?
No, not at all. Not at all. This house is Jane's and my house, but that's not the only reason I want to stay. I first came to this house when I was 6 weeks old, so I'm told. And my grandmother was born there, and my mother was born there. I was not. My mother married a guy from Connecticut, and that's where I was born. But my great-grandparents moved there in 1865. I loved that house. I wanted to live in this house when I was a little kid, long before I met Jane. So it is that way too. But it is, of course, it's my great-grandfather's house. It's Jane's and my house. No, I don't want to move. I have a love in California now, and we commute coast to coast. I can't imagine a greater contrast between her Southern California and my New Hampshire. And so I spend some time away. But I'm not going to move to Southern California.
Well, your home is relatively isolated. It's out in the countryside.
Yep.
And one could argue that you're kind of dwelling in the past.
Sure. But I know better. I live in my own 24-hour day. I was an only child, and I've always loved solitude. And Jane and I managed something I call a double solitude. We were at opposite ends of the house, but we knew each other was there. It was different. But I still am capable of enjoying solitude. I'm just trying to write a little tiny silly poem, which is called, I think I'll tell you the story rather than improvise this that I'm writing. There are many days where I hear only three words spoken by a human being: paper or plastic.
We're going to take a short break, and then we'll have more with Donald Hall. I'm John Walters on the Front Porch on NHPR. Next time on the Front Porch, J.R. Liggett, the man behind the shampoo. That's Tuesday on the Front Porch.
Support for The Front Porch comes from our contributing listeners and from WMUR's New Hampshire Chronicle, a neighborly visit to Hancock tonight at 7:30. The Target Stores of New Hampshire supporting families, arts, and education in local communities with grants and employee volunteer efforts. And Water Street Bookstore in Exeter, presenting authors Bob Begiebing and Ernest Hebert, reading on Tuesday, May 14th at 7:30 p.m. Information at 778-9731. This is NHPR. Stay right here for more of The Front Porch and Fresh Air coming up at 7.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with poet Donald Hall. His new collection of poetry is called The Painted Bed. The book is called The Painted Bed. The cover photograph is the corner of a bed. Is that your bed?
Yes, that's the painted bed, right.
I was going to ask what that bed means to you, but it probably means more than you can say.
Yes, it means more than I can say. I'll just start by saying that it was a family bed. And I don't know its history very much. I remember it from when I was a little child. It wasn't in the master bedroom. My grandparents didn't sleep there. It was upstairs in one of the guest rooms. And I know that that was the bedroom of a great uncle of mine called Uncle Luther, the minister. And I suspect that he brought it with him when he sort of retired to New Hampshire from parishes in Connecticut. One Christmas, we had a nondescript bed where we slept. And Jane loved this bed. It was absolutely uninhabitable. Two bodies would just sink toward the middle, at a sort of sling in the middle. And she, without me knowing it, sort of sneaked it out of the house. I mean, she was very clever about this and got somebody to make it over again and gave it to me for Christmas. So that had that combination of family history and tenderness within marriage. And it's on this bed that Jane died. There are many associations.
The last section of the book are poems about, well, to put it directly, women you've slept with since Jane died.
That's right. We say dated these days.
With whom you've had a relationship.
Okay.
Are you afraid of blowing your image as the noble widower here?
Afraid and eager. I fear that... people may feel that the poems of grief and mourning are less than sincere or thoroughly felt because, years later, I can have a relationship. I do hate that word, but it's hard to find other words, with someone else, with another woman. But I have indeed done it, and I have wanted to. I do believe that if Jane had survived me, which we expected her to do, that Jane would have had lovers.
Well, maybe the best way to talk about this is to have you read a poem called Ardor, which is about the process of, well, loving Jane, missing Jane, and also loving other people.
It is a grief poem, and a poem that moves from grief elsewhere, but it's a poem written at a time of very active grief. Ardor. Nursing her, I felt alive in the animal moment, scenting the predator. Her death was the worst thing that could happen, and caring for her was best. After she died, I screamed, upsetting the depressed dog. Now I no longer address the wall covered with many photographs, nor call her you in a poem. She recedes into the Granite Museum of Jane Kenyon, 1947, 1995. I long for the absent woman of different faces, who makes metaphors and chops onion, drinking a glass of Chardonnay, oiling the wok, humming to herself, maybe thinking how to conclude a poem. When I make love now, something is awry. Last autumn a woman said, I mistrust your ardor. This winter in Florida, I loathed the old couples my age who promenaded in their slack flesh, holding hands. I gazed at young women with outrage and desire, unable to love or to work or to die. Hours are slow and weeks rapid in their vacancy. Each day lapses as I recite my complaints. Lust is grief that has turned over in bed to look the other way. Let me say one thing about that poem, which is not the most serious thing in the world. Poets break their lines at the right-hand side of the page, and you spend a lot of time thinking about your line breaks, what you're going to give emphasis to, and so on. My favorite line break is, I loathed the old couples line break, my age. I do know it, but that's the order. You look at someone of a certain age, and you think, ah, they are of a certain age, and then you say, oh, wait a minute, they're younger than I am.
You write about some everyday things in that poem about Jane, you know, chopping onions, oiling the wok. Are those the things that pop up on you unexpectedly?
In many ways, they're the most poignant things. When I think of her suffering and dying, it is pure blackness. When I think of her, when I think of us sort of being ecstatic together, that's wonderful. But what I miss the most, I suppose, is the ordinariness of things. There's a poem in here about, it's more about watching her cook. I mean, I just read that in ardor, but there's a whole poem about just looking from my chair, not talking with her. Eventually she addresses me, but watching her cook, which I did every night, you know.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with poet Donald Hall. His latest collection is called The Painted Bed. I wanted you to read one of the poems from the last section. I don't know if you have a particular favorite from that section. I was thinking about either Dread and Desire or Affirmation.
I'll read Affirmation. It's the last poem in the book. Yes, I'll just read it. Affirmation. To grow old is to lose everything. Aging, everybody knows it. Even when we are young, we glimpse it sometimes and nod our heads when a grandfather dies. Then we row for years on the midsummer pond, ignorant and content. But a marriage that began without harm scatters into debris on the shore, and a friend from school drops cold on a rocky strand. If a new love carries us past middle age, our wife will die at her strongest and most beautiful. New women come and go, all go. The pretty lover who announces that she is temporary. The bold woman, middle-aged against our old age, sinks under an anxiety she cannot withstand. Another friend of decades estranges himself in words that pollute 30 years. Let us stifle under mud at the pond's edge and affirm that it is fitting and delicious to lose everything.
So if you were writing less about Jane and the loss of Jane than you were a few years ago, what are you writing about these days?
I'm writing about landscape. There's one poem out of the events of last autumn, but it reaches into other poems. I'm not writing about terrorism, but what happened in September has entered my poems. I cannot imagine. And sometimes it enters poems when I have no idea it's coming in. But then I say, yes, that's there. But I've also been writing some happy poems out of my visits to Southern California and Southern California's visits to New Hampshire.
You brought a couple of relatively recent poems with you.
Yep. Here's one that's began just last February, which is kind of early for me to read it aloud. I'll probably make more changes, but it's called Yellow at the moment. the lemon tree. I sit beside bright, dangling yellow ovoids in February in Pat's garden, sniffing the spring breeze and aroma of blossoming. Far from the 2-foot ice of Eagle Pond, from the long farmhouse with its white stacked high over whiteness, its woodshed, its cast iron stove that burned 6 cord a winter for 200 winters of durable anguish, I cast off a sweater of cold to lie under a sun of angels.
How many poems do you write? How do you know when you've got a book?
Oh, I don't know. The answer is I don't know for both questions. How many poems I write? I don't know how many a year or if there's an average. And sometimes I've written very long poems, mm-hmm. and that would askew those figures. Lately, I'm writing quite short ones by and large. I write every day. Maybe yeah. that's the better thing to say. I write every day. And at the moment, what I do particularly is I have, 4, 7, 8 poems that are moving a lot. They tend to be newish, and I am changing them quite a bit every day. And then they slow down, and I put them in a pile of finished, but nothing is finished, poems. And I go through that pile, the whole thing, once a week, once in 10 days. And I always find changes to make in many of the poems there. And it might be a line break. It might be punctuation. More likely it's one word. Sometimes it's more than that. So poetry is a day-long thing. It is a great proportion of my life. And that makes more sense than saying how many for me. But how do I know when I have a book? I actually was worrying about that while driving in. I've got many, many poems. I was thinking it over. Worrying isn't quite the word. And I've got many poems. I've got enough poems now in my big little pile of poems. Probably to make 2 normal-sized books. And I know I don't want to make something so big, and I know that somehow or other I'm going to be able to cut down to the ones in the first place that I like best and the second place that make a book. One problem I have is that many of these poems, some of them go way back, are poems that just don't fit with other poems. And maybe sometime I can do a book that's miscellaneous or a section of a book that's miscellaneous, but I'm worrying about both, or thinking about. Worrying is much too anxious a word for it. I'm just mulling it over. I think I would have a book fairly soon.
You brought in another poem that may or may not be in the next book. Would you like to read that one?
Yeah, too? I think this one will be. This one is called The Flowing. Sleepy, I pour the pale gold of the Napa Valley, a last Pinot Grigio before bed, and look up at your face with its full lips and at your fall of hair while wine rises to the glass's top, accumulating, doming slowly until it can no longer hold back and flows in rapture over the rim.
Well, Donald, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Donald Hull, poet from Eagle Pond Farm in Wilmot, New Hampshire. His latest collection, The Painted Bed, is published by Houghton Mifflin. Next time on The Front Porch, J.R. Liggett, the man behind the shampoo. Jim Liggett used to be an award-winning advertising executive in New York City, but he got out of that life and moved to New Hampshire's Upper Valley. He started a new business there, making shampoo in bar form. J.R. Liggett's old-fashioned shampoo is now sold nationwide, and he's launching a line of other personal care products. Jim Liggett on The Front Porch tomorrow. The Front Porch is a production of NHPR. Producer Shay Zeller, executive producer Laura Colbert. I'm John Walters. Join me again Tuesday at 6:30 on The Front Porch on NHPR.
Support for The Front Porch comes from our contributing listeners and from New Hampshire Plant Growers Association, growers and retailers of locally grown plants since 1952, helping to make gardens spring forth, online at nhplantgrowers.org. Centurion Corporation, insurance brokers and counselors of Hanover, New Hampshire, offering personal, commercial, and wholesale brokerage insurance services to astute clients nationwide at scent www.thewhitecorp.com. And the Mount Washington Hotel and Resort, celebrating a century of grandeur in New Hampshire's White Mountains. Information at 278-1000 or online at mtwashington.com. This is NHPR at WEVO 89.1 in Concord and Manchester, 90.3 in Nashua, 104.3 in Dover, 91.3 in Littleton, WEVH 91.3 in Hanover in the Upper Valley, WEVN 90.7 in Keene in southwest New Hampshire, WEVC 107.1 in Gorham and in Berlin, and we're on the web at nhpr.com.